Well, good morning, again, everyone. My name's Brian, and I'm an alcoholic. I always just like to start before I speak and just ask God to d guide and direct my words so that any alcoholic under that sound is helped, and that I do not harm or send anyone any closer to a drink. My name's Brian Archie, and I'm an alcoholic, and my anniversary date is February 9th, 2011. I haven't spoken in a little bit, and I believe God is trying to reveal something to me today. Not maybe not necessarily you all, but something He wants me to reveal and to talk about. And I could wrap it up quickly and say, I was an incorrigible drunk and found my way by God's grace to AA, but I think you might want to know a little bit about the meat and potatoes in the middle. So I'll say I grew up with my mom and my sister. My dad wasn't in the house, and I know today that that wasn't the reason why I drank at all. But I will say that she was one of not necessarily abundance with money, but abundance in her care and concern for her children. I was really sickly with asthma at the time, and so I can remember her, you would call it helicopter parenting today, while at the same time trying to spoil the sick kid. And so I was in the house a lot, or and not really socializing with other folks except for in my school environment, which was like the best place ever for me. I really loved to learn, so I would make my way from from my house to St. Teresa's. It was about 5, 10 minutes from where I lived into this other world with the only friends that I knew. And what's odd about that is that's the first time I realized that I was that there was a difference between me and them. Going to this school, it was fourth grade year, and I remember I had a little back and forth with a young man, and he decided to call me out of my name, and we had a little skirmish is what I'll call it today. And what's so crazy about it is I went home and I was like, I didn't understand. His mother came, she came over with him, and made him apologize. And my mother started to have a conversation with me that day about, you might have to pull you out of that school, and I'm going to send you over to this to the public school, and you're gonna have to learn how to be with your people. And I was just like, I don't understand exactly what you're saying, and I don't know that I want to do that. But I remember sixth grade year, I made it to public school, and it was like the Rainbow Coalition. I had no clue what was going on. The noise of the world had started, and that was the second fight that I'd ever had in my life, because I was showing up, speaking differently, looking differently, acting differently than everybody else. So while I was quickly learning to people please so that I could find some acceptance, I was also being pushed away. And that, I'll say, a few years later from that, I was turning 13, and that's the time that I had taken my first drink. It was, again, following a group of guys, the cool guys in the neighborhood that I wanted to hang out with and have fun with and be a part of. And they were somehow or another at 13 going to the liquor store. I didn't know that this was a bad idea, but I headed right along with them. And I remember it was Orange Cool Breeze, which you would have thought was Kool-Aid going down, coming out the other end, not so much. I remember drinking with them, having some fun, and somebody basically carrying me to my house and dropping me off on a lawn chair outside. And I could hear my mother in the kitchen on the phone, and she's telling somebody about he's drunk. He was hanging with such and such, and hopefully this will be the last time. And by golly, it absolutely was not. I had found friends, I had found acceptance, and I had found relief from this anxiety that I really had no words for. And while I'll say I didn't begin drinking daily after that, it probably took another 2 years for me to really start to dig in. I was an immediate blackout drinker. And what I mean by that is I would find myself going into a party and typically being carried out, or waking up or coming to in somebody's bed, in somebody's house, in the back seat of somebody's car, or Or as it later started to be in somebody's jail, trying to figure out where was I, what happened, how did I get here, and how do I get out? And oddly, folks would just say, "Oh, you're partying too much. You shouldn't be doing that. You're too young." Like at the same time, I'm somehow right. Like I'm balancing school. I'm going there. I was well educated and doing pretty well for myself in that space, and managed to graduate, on time without any issue. But this was a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, come Friday, Brian would disappear, and head to the noise of the world, just hanging out and just engaging in people, places, and things that I didn't realize were bad for me at the time. But this is just where I'd found that place of acceptance. Honestly, I'll say that I learned to be, and I wouldn't have called it this then, a liar, a thief, a cheat, and a manipulator as a way of getting my way. If you'd have asked me back when I was growing up, I would have told you I got game. That's the way I would have described it, like, because this is what everybody does. But actually, they don't. Folks my age were graduating high school and trying to get to college or maybe holding down the job. They weren't going out of the window because mom said that they couldn't go out and leave. They weren't hanging on street corners, engaging in things that were going on in the community. That's just not what was happening. But if you'd have told me it was just a normal day in the park. And at the end of each one of those days, I found myself wrapped around a drink, or what would happen later is some alcohol in other forms, just to take the edge off, and to be with, right? I'm uncomfortable, but I need to be with others. As I think about that, and I'm going to travel back to, I mentioned my father briefly. My father passed away in 2023, and he died a 40 plus year member of Alcoholics Anonymous, which I would call in good standing. He left here sane, sober, and in service. When we first attempted to connect, I was graduating high school, and I remember I got a card from him. He put $20 in the card and told me good luck, and he loved me, and that was it. And I would hear from him again probably 4 to 5 years later. By that time, I had fathered four children, had found myself in many a skirmish with the law, wasn't holding down the job, just engaged in all type of crazy activity. I'd lived a lot of life, and here he came showing up while I was trying to get on the right path again, to say, "Hey, I'm Dad, I'm here, and let's have a conversation." And I remember by that time he had moved away from Niagara Falls, and he was living in Albany, and I caught the train there. And it was really weird, because I'm like, I know he doesn't drink, but I was drinking the entire way there, because don't you know, I'm upset, my feelings are hurt, and this guy wants to talk to me. I don't know what he has to say. And I remember he started to tell me the story about, him and my mother and why they were separated. And he didn't really explain that he was going through this process of recovery, or that he was involved in the 12 steps. He didn't give me any of that. He just, I don't drink. This is where I'm at. And maybe you want to pay a little bit attention to this. Mind you, I'm holding this huge resentment against this guy, and he's coming back into my life. So I remember leaving there and proceeding to use him to the extent possible, as the years would continue on. Meaning, I wasn't talking to him unless I needed some money, or something was going on, or something was ha or I, these are situations that I had created, mind you. I'm not going to pay the rent, and I'm going to go call my father, and he'll save me because he owes me. I'm gonna go ahead and spend the money from the job, and Christmas time's coming, and I gotta take care of the kids, but I'm gonna go ahead and I'm gonna get it from him. And what's weird about that is he went with that for a good while. And I remember the day that he cut it off. He'd sent me an email, because by then I had repeatedly called him at 1, 2, and 3 o'clock in the morning, in my drunken stupors and/or in blackout, and proceeded to tell his then wife about how bad of a dad he was, and how disgusting it was, and how I hated him, and just all of these things that I, most of which I do not remember saying. But he finally was like, enough was enough. And I remember he said to me, I am going to take my hands off of you at this time, and when you are ready, I will be here if you're able to come back. I didn't get what he was saying. I was like, how dare he turn his back on me yet again? He's just come back into my life. I thought I was justified in my actions and the things that I was saying. And so we stopped talking for a little bit, and I finally found a profession that I was good at, and also allowed me to drink and party, because that's what the culture was. And I just started to run ripshod through people's lives. I was breaking relationships, breaking the honor within these employment settings. I was drinking on such a consistent basis that my grandmother would always tell me that, and I stopped there because it really bothers me still to this day, not knowing the pain that I was causing on the woman I had taken hostage, the kids that I were not fathering that were living in my household, the people that weren't necessarily friends, but I'm keeping them in the circle because they can help feed my habit. And my grandmother, who was always my saving grace, who, regardless of what was going on in my life, would always tell me, God will help you if you ask him. God will help you if you ask him. I know that I'm only here today because I was saved by grace and a power greater than myself that I wasn't really to reach out to unless I was in the bottom of the bucket. And the bottom of the bucket for me means that I had gotten caught in the jackpot and I needed to get out. I was involuntarily detained by police. I was on my way to a hospital. I was it in a fight, couldn't pay the bill, facing close to eviction. The lights are off, the heat's off, and I'm begging, oh God, help me. I'm not going to do any work to make this happen, but I'm just going to foxhole, oh God, help me, and hope something shows up. I was so bad. I would go out and blow the paycheck that's supposed to take care of the groceries and the rent. And then I've had enablers in my life forever. I could call my aunt the moment I would come to and just, hey, we don't have any food. And she would go to the grocery store and just like show up an hour later with a car full of food. So I was not responsible for myself. I wasn't responsible for the folks around me. And I was a taker of time and resources and people's trust and their love. But I thought that this was okay. I didn't understand that. I was sick. I didn't understand that I had this ailment. I didn't understand the thing about this allergy to alcohol. I didn't understand any of that. So in the fussing and the fighting and me trying to find myself and can't think my way out the bottom of a drink, I remember my father, the first big book that and I still have it, that I received, it came from him. He sent it to me in the mail. And inside it says something about all will be well if you don't take the first drink. And I remember opening it up and I seen this and I'm like, how dare he? Like, who does he think he is, right? I'm still pompous and arrogant and can't buy myself a bowl of soup. But I'm figuring like he's downing and talking about me, and I want nothing to do with this. So I closed the book up. I set it on a nightstand right next to the Bible that I wasn't opening, by the way. And it would sit there up until the weekend when I would decide to crack open the bottle, grab the shot glass, be 4 or 5 glasses in, and not glance over at the book and say, maybe I need to be reading this. And every time I would pick it up and open it to a page or two, and I'd try to read a couple of sentences in my delirium, I'd put it down because I'm like, I'm blaspheming what's happening. I'm not supposed to be doing this with a drink in my hand. Somehow or another, I had sense enough to understand that. Not long after, he'd sent my father, because he understood he couldn't 12-step me. He'd sent a friend. His name's Anthony R. Me and Anthony are friends to this day. That's the best sober support I've ever had in my life. He sent this man to me, and he'd gotten his permission to pass along his phone number and It's like, maybe you should try to go to a meeting. So, got the number. I went ahead, I gave him a call, and just arranged to get to this meeting. Mind you, the alcohol intake is increasing. I'm now a daily drinker, going nowhere really fast. Take time out to make this telephone call, right? Which I attribute to saving my life. Anthony picks me up and we go to there used to be a meeting at the hospital, at Memorial here on Friday nights, 7 o'clock. He took me to that meeting, picked me up. I don't remember a lot about what was said, but I remember a guy had just gotten released from rehab, and he was giving a talk with two other people. He was from Rochester, I remember that. And he was pacing back and forth in the room like he had just been uncaged. And I was just like, I don't know what's going on here. I don't know why I'm here. There had to be 100 people in the room, but I'm ready to go. And I'm really ready to go because the liquor store was across the street. And I remember driving past it and getting really thirsty as I saw it. But I'm like, I can't ask this guy to stop at the liquor store. So in my mind, all I'm thinking about is when we leave here, how am I getting back? So I don't hear the message. I'm well in tuned with the mess and sicker than a bag of rocks. I get back in the car with Anthony. I make it back to the liquor store. I didn't see him again for probably a year and a half. And when I did, I was on my way into a meeting from rehab. So let me back up just a little bit. Had to be 2008. I'm working this job I told you I loved and I was great at. And I remember coming into the office this day and they told us that they were closing. This was around the time the housing crash was happening and folks were losing their jobs. And I was in a financial sector. Say, we're closing up. Today's last day. Here, your last paycheck's coming. It was right before Christmas, actually. And I was like, oh my gosh, what are you doing to us? But in the back of my mind, saying, yes, I can drink freely now. Leave out of there, get our, get my belongings. And from that day forth, I had probably for 2 years drank a liter plus of vodka a day. I found myself waking up in cemeteries, in parks, with people I don't remember, that I don't remember. Remember, going back, I said initially I was a blackout drinker, and that carried on and increased. To a point that where like I would get calls from my mother trying to explain to me things that I had done the days before. And most times I'm just like, yeah, it wasn't me, wasn't there, but I had no recollection. I had no clue. I had no clue what I was doing, who I was talking to, what I was taking from. I just knew that liquor is what I needed. Liquor is what I was getting to. Hopeless is the word that I'll say now, right? And so 2 years, which I barely remember, we get to 2011, and it's cold, really cold out. A few weeks are passing, cars down, my wife's ready to go. Kids are half talking to me. I am unemployable, right? Can't hold a job for shaking. I drink to get paid, and when I get paid, I don't show up. Like that had become the habit. So there's no income. There's no nothing happening. And a couple of weeks are going, and I'm making my way back and forth to the liquor store. It's super cold. I remember the ice. I remember it. I remember just the consistent snow, and something was just coming over me where I was just like, I don't understand what to do. I don't know where this is going. My mental is suffering. Definitely suicidal without actually wanting to being able to complete the task. To a point in my life where I'm praying every day to not wake up. That's not what sane people do, right? Not, that's just not what sane people do. To be upset because they've taken another breath and immediately make it to a liquor store, make it to the drink. And so this was one of those days, the morning I'd gotten up and I'd found my way to the liquor store to get what I needed to try to make it through the day. And I got back in the house and I was just like, I'm really tired. I'm really tired. Nobody's talking to me. And I'm standing in my living room. And I can still remember there was this huge picture window. And it wasn't sunny, but like with all the snow, it's just super lit up. And in my mind, my grandmother was talking about you ask God for help and he'll help you. And I remember just taking the bottle and saying, like, God, if you're there and if you're listening, I really would appreciate if you'd help me. And if you can't, please let me go. I turned the bottle up, and the next thing that I recall was being nudged to get up off the floor. There was an EMT that had made that she's now in my house. I don't recall her name, but I remember she was her hair was red. And she's telling me to get up off the floor. I'm hearing commands. Get up off the floor. I need you to get up. Do you hear me? I need you to get up. And next, I need you to walk down the stairs. We're going to go get into the ambulance. I need you to walk down the stairs. And I'm really, I have no clue what's happened, but somebody's telling me what to. They're not asking questions anymore. I'm getting commands, right? So I make it from the ambulance. We get to St. Mary's, and I remember her telling me, you're gonna sign these papers, and they're gonna start detox. They get me in a little room, and they're putting these needles in my stomach, and I'm again my mind spinning, my head spinning, and they're trying to keep me from convulsing. And I remember a woman comes in from the rehabilitation floor, and she was like, we don't have any beds right now. By this time, this is my fifth or sixth appearance here for detox, so they know that I have an issue. And I remember her saying, if I can get you a space, will you stay? And automatically, yes just came out of I don't know where that because me, I just want you to fix me up so I can go. The yes was immediate. And she was like, are you sure? And I was, yes, right? They left me down there that night. Next thing you know, I'm up in Clearview the next morning. This isn't me. This is the God of my misunderstanding helping me when I can't help myself. This is something in someone showing up for me. That help that I asked for is now appearing in a way that I cannot explain. Can't explain it, but I've asked, he's answered, and now I need to follow through. So I make it up to Clearview to the floor. I'm there for maybe 3 weeks or so, just for some insurance things. So it's not like I signed out or anything. But I'm there for about 3 weeks, getting this belly full of AA and recovery, and this one day away from a drink, and them really trying to put some process is what I called it, a day away from a drink to put process back into my life. What's so funny? I remember getting like this kitchen duty. I hadn't been responsible for anything in the last couple of years, and I'm on kitchen duty. I was happy as I don't know what to be cleaning a kitchen and helping people fix sandwiches. I'm responsible for something now, right? I'm just it was it's a feeling I can't even explain. And it was cool. They said I was really crazy about it, but like whatever. It was something for me to do. Going to those meetings every day, and he started to take us to these outside meetings, which is where I ran back into the Anthony that I mentioned earlier. I remember talking to him for a few minutes there, and he was like, "When you get out, to call me." And the day I was released, I didn't go to a meeting immediately. I went home because I was like, "This is really happening," and I remember my wife at that time who was ready to go. She was just like, "Well, what are you going to do?" I was just like, I need to just take a minute, take a beat, and realize what I've committed to." And the next morning, I'll say, is when my new life started. Anthony took me to the Eye Opener, sat on here. So that is my home group. It has been since I came in. And just getting there in that moment, being surrounded by these guys with all this sobriety that really just wanted to help me. They wanted to help me help myself. And you know what my first thought was? They don't know me. They don't look like me. And they don't want me here. Active alcoholism is real. And it was trying to talk me out of being saved, which happens all the time. I realized that once the drink gets put down, it is my thinking that will destroy me. It is my thinking that will deter me. It is my thinking that will put space in between me and the God of my understanding. To create that chaos where I'm fuzzed long enough, where it might not be the drink that'll get me, but it'll be some other behavior that I should have let go. That'll take me back out. So that first day, they pass around the book and they put some phone numbers in there. For me to reach out, and I began going there every day with him, and typically to a second meeting. If I were to say anything to anybody today, where you talk about meeting makers make it, I'm going to say that meeting makers, that phrase really means to me that I'm widening the circle of sobriety and widening the circle of care, because the message is in the meeting, the meeting's in the room. If I'm not staying in the room to get any of that, if I'm not paying attention and actively listening and participating while I'm doing all of that, I won't make it. I walk out of there without contributing, without listening hard enough to receive, and I'll go back to those old spots and old people and old places and old things. And luckily, I was able to be gifted a circle of love, circle of trust. That helped to carry me through. I didn't get a sponsor immediately. Why I really can't respond to that, but it was probably about 6 or 7 months in before I got a sponsor and actually started actively working the steps. Thinking about that and that process, I would say that the day that I asked God for help, I asked God for help was me, admitting I'm powerless. Knowing that my life was unmanageable and turning my life over. I would say that happened in that sense for me with the actions that were taken. But of course, walking back through that with a sponsor, getting to these amend to these amends and the rest of that the rest of the toolkit that's presented to us in the big book. 2 years I continue the process, continue making connections, continue going to meetings, and really try to turn my life around to be of service. And folks would say I was on the pink cloud, and I luckily for me, I would say maybe that I was, but also in tuned and closer to God than I had ever been. And that April, 2 years into my sobriety, I'd experienced some death in the family, starting that February, and it was a successive thing. And in February, someone passed. In March, my brother-in-law, who was at the time 31 years old, cirrhosis, alcoholism had taken him out. And in April, my son died by suicide. And I remember, getting the phone call, and in disbelief and in shock, and then people waiting to see what I was going to do. And I firmly know that my connection to my God at that time is what saved my life. Immediately went to a meeting. I immediately had those circle of people that I had been engaged with throughout those meetings that were there with me to walk through that. And I've been able to find an avenue of which to be of service in that space. For folk, other folks that have been affected by that same happening. I have found an opportunity to, through this program, join and run a not-for-profit organization, where I started off volunteering, because all of a sudden this be of service moved beyond inside the rooms of AA. I'm really engaged in community, really engaged in people, and have actually, by no stretch of my own imagination, found myself in government. And that's not me. Yes, I'm the guy, right, that's still on the street corner trying to talk somebody out of something. I'm the guy whose best thinking is to run game. I'm the guy who has no understanding of how to parent, be a father, be a friend, let alone really love, right? Until I got here and you people showed me, and I say you people because it's the people in this space showed me, right, that one, it's not about me. If I'm not decentering myself and thinking about others, I'm at a loss. I'm in trouble. If I'm not attempting to do something for somebody, and it might just be me sitting down, keeping my mouth closed and listening to them for the moment. If I'm not doing that, I'm still self-seeking and self-serving. So it sounds like roses and rainbows, right? But I will say that I have an active cuckoo that shows itself all the time. The moment that I don't get up and put my feet on the ground and ask God to help me throughout the day, ask God to keep me sober for the day, my mind takes over. And my mind will take me places that I don't want to be. Folks, I remember, and I hear it a lot lately, I guess just because it's holidays. It's like you got to pray and you need to be doing this and that and throw the thing under your bed so you'll hit your knees, every morning and and at night. And I'm not going to say that that's the way that I pray. I've understood that in the moment that I need to ask for help. In the moment, whatever that moment may be. And then when I ask for help, I actually have to stop and sit and pause and listen for that next right thought or action, because I will take over. Right? The drink is the thing that bothers me today. It's all the other defects that I try to work on shaving away as I continue doing this thing called life. And I can only continually do that with one, people being upfront and honest with me when I'm being full of it. Somebody actually pulling my coat if I'm falling off the beam, or I'm saying something wrong, or I'm in a place that I'm not supposed to be. And that only occurs if I am staying connected and grounded, not just in service, but to the people in this program. Like right now, me and my sponsor have a there's just this, a weird relationship happening, and which means that I probably need a new sponsor right now. I asked him about me, like, hey, when's the last time you've been to me? You want to go to a meeting? He's like, I don't go there anymore. And I was like, excuse me? I was like, what do you mean? You're the guy that's my Yoda, and you're not going to a meeting? That means I need to change my path. It's not rocket science. Now I need to change my path. I understand what the recipe is to keep me sober one day at a time. The folks that are here and that I have engaged with over a period of time have showed me that this thing works if I put in just a little bit of effort. There is no substitute for Alcoholics Anonymous for me. There is no substitute for the fellowship and the program that is within the book. While I may be able to add on, I cannot subtract this. The moment that I do that, all bets are off, and I turn back into that liar, thief, cheat, manipulator, and stealer. And I will take until I take my own life, not realizing that that is again being of disservice. I'm looking at the time, and I want to say this though before I go. I was thinking about the family afterward. I don't know why I got to that chapter in the book, and it always seems like, hey, we're doing well. We can hold a job. We're great in society. People like us. This is happening. My biggest struggle has and continues to be the folks that are within my immediate space, and making sure that I'm not overabundantly seeking to do things outside and not doing that work within the house. And I'm not trying to mend those bridges with my children, with my significant other, and with my family, because I've done a lot of disservice and harm to them. And the same love and tolerance that I would give another sick and suffering person, I need to do and give to them. So that is the thing that I would leave folks with. I would will say thank you, John, for the invitation. I want to say this, and I hope it's not embarrassing to you, John, but like, you know, I met John through a series of meetings, and you know how when I say folks talk about what they'll do and how close they are and how they'll show up for you, and then when it happens, you get crickets on many occasion. My mother died, and John and I were just building a relationship, and who was like front and center as we were planning activities just to celebrate her transition. Like this dude was there. Like, there is not one person that I have in my life today that does not actively participate the best way that they know how. And I try to do that thing and be that for others so that we know that it is possible, that change is possible. I don't want to cry. That like this is really real. That we can grow, that we can evolve, that we can be better, regardless of how we think of ourselves, regardless of the things that we've done, that there is transition. There is transition. If I just try one day at a time, one step in front of the other, drink down, head forward, prayers up. Thank you for letting me share.